Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
I asked Malik why he didn't throw the ball on that third down, and he told me that Josh threw up on the ball. I was like, that's the first time I've ever heard that.
Okay, so that's what happened there. All right, are we happy?
He couldn't get a good grip on it, didn't feel...
I know, right? There's no way to talk about it without... Blah.
Anyway.
I don't know. I call timeout. I see that. Timeout.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Vitrano.
Trump safe, suspect in custody.
There's no indication that he had any mean bone in his body that would drive him to do something like this.
Yeah, neighbors of 58-year-old Wyan Wesley Routh, never saw it coming, but that's the man authorities arrested, accused of an attempt on former President Trump's life at a golf club in Florida. ABC News chief investigative reporter Josh Margolin is live with us from New York this morning. Josh, can you start by taking us through what we know about how the attempt went down and how the Secret Service was able to foil that attempt?
It was very cinematic. We know now that this individual took up a position outside the fence, but with a line of sight of one of the greens at one of Trump's golf clubs in Florida, and that the Secret Service counter-surveillance team working with locals, they go ahead of the former president as he's on a golf course, and they check out the next hole or the next two holes that he's heading to make sure they're secure before he shows up on that particular green. They were there. They saw some movement in the brush out, you know, by the fence. They saw the barrel of the rifle. They immediately gave direction of some sort to this person to either identify himself or to show himself or to drop the gun or something, did not listen to the instructions, like you see on television, and they fired because there was an obvious threat. There was an obvious gun right there, and the individual dropped the weapon, left his stuff, and took off.
What do we know about this guy?
We're starting to see a picture. They have not formally charged him or announced his name, but the name that we are reporting that other news organizations have, he appears to be somebody who has a really long list of social media postings, deemed to at one point have been a supporter of Trump, seems to have soured on Trump. His big political issue is Ukraine. He said that he had gone to Ukraine to try to become a foreign fighter on behalf of Ukraine in the battle against Russia, but that he was not allowed to do that. It doesn't necessarily seem that he has any military background, but he seemed to have been a wannabe. He was a business owner in North Carolina. We also have some reports that he had owned a business in Hawaii, but it does seem that about 15 or 20 years ago, he had some sort of an episode with law enforcement where he was charged with a weapons charge after after some sort of a barricaded subject kind of episode. It does seem online that he was angry, but beyond that, we don't necessarily see that he was announcing or planning to do something violent.
Talking with ABC News chief investigative reporter Josh Margolin. He's live with us from New York this morning. So moving forward, Josh, the president is supposed to be in Michigan for a former president is supposed to be in Michigan for a town hall campaign event tomorrow. As far as we understand, that is still on. So how difficult for the Secret Service to beef up that security and make sure that he is protected?
Well, as we are reporting this morning, as soon as this happened yesterday, immediately reassessments of all the security, both for Trump as well as for his opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris, as well as for President Biden. The Secret Service protects all of them. They're constantly looking at these things and reassessing. The question really is, was yesterday a failure or a success? We know that it was a failure in Butler, Pennsylvania on July 13th when the former president was injured. Somebody else was killed. Two other attendees were seriously injured. But yesterday, you know, there's some view that this was a success. That's why there are redundancies. That's why there are agents who protect him physically and stand around him, but that's why there are agents who go ahead of him, who are behind him. There's planning that's made. They have to look at all of these things. They are taking them into account. Obviously, the Secret Service would prefer somebody to never leave a security bubble, the White House or the Naval Observatory or President Trump's home, obviously, but that's not possible, especially for a candidate, especially 50 days out from an election.
Josh Margolin, ABC News Chief Investigative Reporter. Thanks for the time this morning, Josh.
Hey, thank you.
What a fascinating question, right? And that is the question. Was yesterday, in terms of the Secret Service, was it a failure? Was it a success? Yeah. It sounds like they're still debating whether or not this guy even got a shot off.
Yeah, they haven't said whether or not he fired. But at the same time, do you need to change your protocols now that you've told everyone, oh, this is what we usually do in the golf course?
Here's how we clear the golf course.
And by the way, that's not a new story. The Secret Service and the challenges of protecting the president or any president when on a golf course has been there. Like, this isn't a new situation where they've had to, like, figure out how best to do that.
Yes. And presidents golfing is not a new thing either.
Correct.
It's been around as long as the presidency in golf. But, right, you're in this area that's, you know, any golf course, it's open and there are accessibility points as well. So it is a challenge. 617 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
Well, so is there buzz? There is, right? A little bit of buzz for the Brewers. Successful weekend.
We had that game yesterday, yeah, like multiple times.
We did. Yeah, back and forth Sunday afternoon. You wonder if the crew it was intense at times, but still success. The Brewers started the day in a 5-run hole, but a 3-run bomb from Jackson Chourio helped get them on the board. Ultimately, a Chourio 2-run triple in the 10th would put them up.
First and second, two out. First pitch, ground ball, right side, base hit. Inside the bag at first and into the right field corner. Scoring is Ortiz. Right behind him, scoring is Terang. Relay to third is not in time. 2-run triple. Jackson Chourio delivers.
Yeah, it was awesome. That put the crew up 10-8, but it was not to be. Jared Koenig came out for the 10th inning after pitching the 9th. It looked like they could have used Evan Williams in the 10th. He was ready to go. He wanted to get in, but Murphy said never could pull the trigger on it.
He was available, but not for any extended period. So if you put him in the game with no outs or something like that, then you know there's potentially he's got to throw a high number of pitches and he's not available.
Just didn't want to burn him out. They wanted to use him if there was one out left. If Koenig could get two outs, they
so
would have brought
him. So that's why he was up at all. Okay, I got it.
And, you know, they never got the two outs. Koenig
looked good in the inning prior.
Right, right. And you can't blow up your bullpen. You got to be methodical, and that's unfortunately what would happen. He gives up a single at the bases loaded. The D-backs win 11-10. Still a successful weekend, though. So as of now, the magic number to clinch the NL Central, 3-3. And the Brewers are two games behind the Dodgers for that elusive 2 seed in the playoffs.
To the NFL, Falcons and Eagles tonight in Philadelphia to finish out week 2. The Packers, that feels better.
He's got room. Josh Jacobs gallops 3. Biggest run in his short tenure with the Packers. Jacobs for 40 yards.
Fox Sports on the call. 40 of his 151 rushing yards.
Jeez.
Packers ran all over the Colts.
Yep.
Ran the ball 53 times. Head coach Matt LaFleur.
It's one thing to want to do that, but to be able to go out there and execute that, I think that says a lot about really just all 11 out there, starting with the offensive line, but our backs were running hard. Our receivers were blocking their butts off like they always do.
Yeah, especially, too, when they know that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
They knew you were going to run.
No surprise.
So to be able to put that on. Now, granted, the Colts, I believe, have the worst rushing defense in the league.
Well, they definitely do now.
Not going to be better after yesterday. Ooh. Packers beat the Colts 16-10 in the final.
Bears fall to the Texans Sunday Night Football 19-13. Lions get upset by the Buccaneers, and the Vikings are now in first place after beating the 49ers.
Eric says I have to talk about the vomit.
What was that sound? All right, go ahead.
You think we have to talk about this?
I mean, it is a thing.
It was brought up at the news conference.
They asked the coach about it.
Third down situation.
LaFleur calls in a pass play. Quarterback decides to keep it and run with it. LaFleur is confused, as were a lot in the stands, I guess. Turns out he did that because moments before the snap, the center, Josh Myers, puked on the football.
I asked Malik why he didn't throw the ball on that third down, and he told me that Josh threw up on the ball. I was like, that's the first time I've ever heard that.
Okay, so that's what happened there. All right, are we happy?
How did he couldn't get a good grip on it?
I know, right? There's no way to talk about it without blah.
Anyway.
I don't know. I call timeout. I see that. Timeout.
No, but he literally snapped the ball immediately after. But I think that actually happens on the field more often than you realize.
It does. Next up for the Packers, they travel to Tennessee to play the Titans. It's a noon kick on Sunday.
Jim never vomits at home.
A record-setting night during television's biggest night, the Emmys. Shogun, FX's remake of the 16th century feudal Japan drama, had 18 Emmys in its first season. So that's the most Emmys ever in a single year for any show. It's also the first non-English language show to win Best Drama. So it had a good night.
So people are watching this with subtitles and stuff?
Yeah.
Like, it's super popular.
Mm-hmm. Should give it a shot. Your kid would like it, I bet.
FX?
FX is
good. Do I need an app for that, or I can watch that?
You can do it on Hulu, too.
Yeah, Hulu's got it. So, yeah, give it a shot. So that was the big winner.
How old did that sound? I need one of these apps for that.
There it is.
Is that on the streaming?
As far as best comedy goes, the Max series Hacks would win for its third season, beating The Bear, which is a huge show. Everyone
you like
loves
that
The
one.
Bear. And what people don't understand about The Bear is why it was even up for this category, because it's not really a comedy show. And the Levies made a joke about that.
Now, some of you might be expecting us to make a joke about whether The Bear is really a comedy. But in the true spirit of The Bear, we will not be making any jokes.
I see what you did there.
So Happy Days was celebrated. Ron Howard and Henry Winkler, you heard him out there walking out into the diner.
I have a solution.
What?
Well, you know.
He wanted him
you
to
could
sing
do it.
The theme
no,
song.
Come on. First of all, I'm out of practice. And second of all, it takes schooling and, you know.
Well, you went to the Yale School of Drama, Henry. Come
so
on, you know.
Sitting
you
in the on the stage. So what does Winkler the Fonz do? Well, he strolls over to the jukebox and does what he does. Hits it like he always has. And there you go. Then he started acting like Fonz again. So that was your Happy Days moment as they look back at 50 years. They talked a lot about political stuff, kind of, because don't forget what had happened earlier in the day yesterday with the whole Donald Trump stuff. So we did hear a little bit of this.
Keep believing and vote. Vote for your rights.
But what we didn't hear is a lot of anti-presidential stuff, meaning there wasn't any like real major criticism of the former president, I think probably in part because of what had happened earlier in the day. Jon Stewart, who won an Emmy for The Daily Show, was asked about it afterward.
We live in a horrible moment where emotions, and I think the one rule maybe we could all benefit from in terms of engagement is no shooting.
Yeah, maybe that would
help. Can we all agree on that one?
Right? Well, with this, though, it's been 25 years since The West Wing. So a portion of the cast came out, and Martin Sheen looks the same. President Bartlett, was that?
Yeah, Bartlett.
Was?
There you go.
Fascinating little commentary here.
It's hard to believe that just 25 years ago, Aaron and the writers actually had to use their imaginations to create interesting plot lines for The West Wing.
Unlike today, where storylines can be plucked right off the news, storylines that writers would have deemed a bit far-fetched, if not utterly ridiculous, 25 years ago.
And now that's the real stuff.
All right, that's an interesting take.
So yeah, all in all, a long night. I didn't watch the entire thing, but I was entertained by it.
Brewers could clinch a division crown this week as they return home. We've got the Phillies up next. Sports at 6:45.
In Washington today, a three-judge federal appeals court panel will hear challenges from TikTok and a group of content creators to a U.S. law which would give the platform's China-based parent company ByteDance until January to sell it or face a ban in the U.S. Remember that this was passed by Congress and signed by the president earlier this year. Now, while American lawmakers have raised hypothetical security concerns regarding user privacy, rights groups like the ACLU point out that there is no available evidence that ByteDance has given U.S. user data to the Chinese government, saying TikTok is being unfairly singled out over American social media platforms because of anti-China sentiment. A little bit more from Thane Rosenbaum of CBS.
The Justice Department and the FTC believe that the data that TikTok gathers from Americans are too easily accessible to Chinese leaders.
Yeah, they don't like how that could be used. More than 170 million TikTok users. It's one of the biggest players in social media right now. And today, they're hoping to move forward with a decision sooner than later. Both the DOJ and the Chinese owners are saying, hey, can we have a decision made so we can move this up to the Supreme Court if we have to before?
Right.
Because the ban would go into effect in January.
It's interesting. Whether or not you agree that TikTok ought to be banned is an independent question of whether or not it's legal to do so. Right?
Right.
I mean, like the outcome that you desire is different than the question as to whether or not it's allowed.
Correct.
To be done. Mm-hmm. And that's what this really gets at the core of. Not like, do you like TikTok or don't you? It's a matter of legality, and these things are complicated.
No,
and to your point, regardless of what they decide here, it's got another step to go.
They're going to push it up to the U.S. Supreme Court, sure.
6:38 on Wisconsin's Morning News. On this Monday morning, still a lot we don't know this morning about the death of Elijah Vu, toddler who went missing in Manitowoc County back in February. His remains discovered a little over a week ago and now confirmed by authorities that it was indeed Elijah. They did that late Friday afternoon.
This is not the outcome that we hoped for. The family's devastated. We're devastated. Our community's devastated. I never met Elijah, but I watched that three-year-old boy bring out the best in this community.
So that's a police chief there in Two Rivers, Chief Ben Minert, making that announcement, bringing it up today for a couple of reasons. He, first of all, you know, didn't want it to get lost in the late Friday, right?
Right, yep,
and
which can happen.
We had learned that there was going to be a news conference early Friday, and then, you know, folks go about their business and maybe lose track of things. So this was the outcome of that, that big announcement. And then also, you know, important to know that Elijah Vu's not still out there somewhere, so there is that for the family. And important to know that he'll be able to be laid to rest now. But in terms of what happens next in holding people responsible for his death, that is still a wide open question this morning. This may help, but it may not.
We may never know.
Right? Because you know, look, the only two people arrested in this case do remain behind bars, but neither charged in connection even with Elijah Vu's disappearance, much less his death. I'll update them in a minute. But on that point, authorities right now have not released a cause of death, even if they're able to determine one. So that will require more forensic analysis. And it is possible, I suppose, right, that little Elijah Vu did in fact wander away from his home and end up there on his own. It's about 3 miles from where he was last seen to where his remains were discovered. Elijah's mother, Katrina Bauer, and her boyfriend, Jesse Vang, he was the last person known to have seen Vu alive, last person known to be caring for him at the time. They are both charged with various things, including child neglect, but so far they have not been charged with anything related to Elijah's disappearance. And it's unclear right now whether the discovery of these remains and whatever authorities can learn about them will further tie them in any way with direct evidence.
What evidence could be uncovered potentially?
Right. There could be some, but we don't know, and we don't know what that will be. And absent that, then you just have her not talking, him not talking. And what else do you have? It's possible it just ends this way. Vang is next scheduled to be in court later this month. Bauer in October. Both do remain in custody. 6:45 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
The countdown is on. Now it's for real. Yes, the buzz is back. Now, the Brewers may have lost on Sunday, but it is a fairly successful weekend. The Cubs keep scuffling around. The Brewers are able to take 2 of 3 from the Diamondbacks. So right now, what does that mean as far as clinching the NL Central? The magic number is 3-3. So could happen this week. Could happen as soon as tomorrow.
Right, because if the Brewers win tonight and the Cubs lose, there's 2.
Yeah, and then
you
one.
Get 2 tomorrow. So it can't be today, but it could be tomorrow.
Yeah, so things are looking good for the Crew. It just wasn't their day yesterday. They could have won that game. They were down 5-0. Then they scored 8 unanswered. They were up. It went into extras. Jackson Chourio did everything in his power to win that game for them.
First and second, 2 out. First pitch. Ground ball, right side, base hit. Inside the bag at first and into the right field corner. Scoring is Ortiz. Right behind him, scoring is Terang. Relay to third is not in time. 2-run triple. Jackson Chourio delivers.
He also had a 3-run bomb earlier in the game, so that made it 10-8 in the top of the 10th, but they would go on to lose in the bottom half, 11-10.
That pitcher there was throwing 103 miles an hour. 103. And like consistently, 101, yeah. 99, 102, 103.
Oh, hey, you can sit on that fastball, baby.
That's right.
Live in stereo. Hey, so what happened was in the bottom half, they didn't use Devin Williams. They maybe could have for one batter. That's what Pat Murphy said afterwards.
I wanted him to be available for a short period, if at all. So if we got to that 2-out period, I would have brought him in.
You just got to be careful. You want to get greedy. You want to win every game, but you got to be careful on your arms, and that's what he was doing yesterday. So no Devin Williams, but now he should be good to go.
Okay.
Getting into a big series starting tonight at AmFam Field against the Phillies.
Question needed to be asked, but it was answered. Yeah. I agree with him then.
Okay.
Week two. Good, just so we're on record with that. That Vinny was,
we'll tell him tomorrow.
Vinny was okay with that decision. Great. Week two in the NFL wraps up tonight with the Eagles hosting the Falcons on Monday Night Football. The Packers ran all over the Colts Sunday afternoon, and backup quarterback Malik Willis, good enough and then some.
Put it in the air this time. It is through there to Wicks and a touchdown. Willis threads it through for his first NFL strike and a touchdown.
Fox Sports on the call. The score to Dontayvion Wicks, the lone touchdown of the game for the Packers. How you feel about things, Mr. Willis?
I wouldn't say I'm proud. I'm more blessed than anything. I'm just grateful for God giving me another opportunity somewhere different, a clean slate, and just giving me the opportunity to be around guys who helped me get going in this past 3 weeks as far as just learning as much as I can. And
just enough as the Packers win 16-10. Nice performance overall by the defense. Couple of picks there.
Yeah.
Was head coach, you want to talk about coaching decisions, right? Decisions that coaches or managers make. Was head coach Matt LaFleur careful with his quarterback and play calling? Yes. A lot of fans unhappy. Even at the stadium, you could hear the boos coming out as LaFleur basically ran out the clock at the end of the first half instead of trying to go for a drive and another score.
Call that conservative. I call that being smart. The guy had they had three timeouts. I mean, like I said, Malik has been here for 3 weeks. To put them in a two-minute situation at the end of the half when you're up 10-0, I would call that reckless.
All right.
That was an amazing game he coached yesterday. One of his best, I would say.
And it's all good when it works.
Yep.
And ultimately, that was enough. And, you know, the final score bore it out. Like, let's not be reckless, as coach said. Let's not put our guy in a position where he thinks he needs to make a play. You give up a pick six and all the momentum is gone and now they've scored and all that other stuff. So Packers will travel next to Tennessee to face the Titans on Sunday and quickly elsewhere in the NFC North. Lions and Bears both lost, but the Vikings beat the 49ers, so they are atop the division at 2-0.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's early yet, as we say. 6:51. On Wisconsin's Morning News. This morning, the mural on the near north side of downtown on a building with a giant swastika intertwined with the Star of David means terror, the ongoing war in Gaza with Nazism, or sort of actually reverse Nazism, if you will. It's boarded up as it's twice now been vandalized since it went up late last week. The building owner is a Palestinian-American who's not budging nor apologizing. Dueling statements from the Milwaukee Common Council on the mural urging him to remove it. Interesting thing at play here, in addition to what continues to be the ongoing story of this mural. Milwaukee Common Council has 15 members. 14 of them signed on to a letter of condemnation. They noted the vandalism and said this, while calling on all to respect private property and First Amendment rights, it is also important to call out those who import symbols of division, hatred, and violence to our community and then act surprised when they are not welcomed with open arms. So they condemned the mural. They've asked the building owner to take it down. They're not forcing it, but they've asked him to do that. Pretty strong, I thought, unequivocal statement. What about number 15, though?
The alderman who wasn't on this?
Alderman Lamont Westmoreland,
who's shown a real willingness to do things kind of his own way and think independently, put out his own statement shortly thereafter, also condemning. But this is what he said. While I was not on the earlier joint statement issued by 14 of my colleagues, why not? I'll never serve as a rubber stamp for the words of others. The statement went through multiple revisions by several council members, removing things they didn't like and adding what they thought was missing. My attempt to have input was disregarded. So that explains why he didn't want to sign on to that statement. He did his own thing.
Okay.
Actually, his statement, similar to the other, really, condemns the use of the swastika, urges the building owner to take down the mural. Wasn't actually that different. He just seemed to be bothered by the process.
Yeah, doesn't like, well, right. Okay, good for you. That's fine.
I did disagree with the alderman on this point, that the building owner putting up the mural, this is what he said about him. While I don't believe the intention was to upset or offend, it has done just that. Well, of course it was. You don't use a swastika without intending both to upset and offend, right?
I'd say that's not going to, it's clearly going to offend someone.
Yes, that was absolutely the intention here. The intention was to upset and offend. It's why the guy's got multiple cameras out there to capture exactly what he anticipated was going to happen. The thing was vandalized multiple times. Regardless, I mean, it was intended to upset and offend, and it has done exactly that. What happens from here on out? I mean, whether you believe that it's protected speech, or do you think the city could somehow enforce like a disorderly conduct violation?
Hmm.
You could maybe go down that slippery slope from a legal standpoint, but that gets dicey. It's private property. It's this person's voice. But it's a hate symbol. It's a known hate symbol.
Correct.
It's inciting other people to do things. So maybe you could go down that way. It doesn't seem like at this point the city is doing that. They're just asking the guy to take it down. And he's now apparently saying he's not going to take it down until he gets an apology from the Common Council for ripping on him.
Oh, come on.
I don't think that's forthcoming either. So this is where we're at with that. Right now, the mural is pretty much boarded up, so you can't see most of it. 6:58 on Wisconsin's Morning News.